Good morning, Game Cafe. Today's Monday, February 16th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I know I did. Lots going on, but certainly took the time to spend some time with my wife and my family, and that's always nice. Some news coming out from Gamecock football, a couple of newsy items as we chug towards spring football practice for 2026. Jody Camillus, the South Carolina special teams coordinator, was reported yesterday by Matt Zenitz and confirmed by everyone, including inside the Gamecocks. He is going to Vegas to join Clint Kubiak's staff with the Las Vegas Raiders as the special teams coordinator. Confirmed that yesterday morning from a contact within the program. My thoughts on this, and I'm going to be on the morning show with JB to talk about some of these football news items later. So we won't dig too much into it, but I think it's I guess not unrealistic, less than ideal right now before spring ball. You got to go fill a coordinator spot. If you're Shane Beamer, the coaching pool has sort of dried up, so to speak. Who you're going to get? But one thing Shane Beamer does know quite well is special teams, and I can't imagine that he won't thoroughly evaluate and, make a good hire there. I did see some reaction on X about, oh, well, good, they could be good at special teams again. And again, I'll say this, the 2022 special teams were historically good. That was a big reason that team won 8 games. Look at the Notre Dame bowl game. They stayed in it because of special teams and defense. Pete Limbo, I think every trick play he called converted except maybe one the entire season. And then the next year, it probably didn't work out as well, right? In 2023, and then in 2024, it worked some of the time. The trick plays don't always come. They're like turnovers, but more rare, I guess. So just because the fake punts stop working, that doesn't, it's not necessarily coaching. I think that Joe D did a pretty good job. And I say that because I can remember a time when South Carolina was winning, when one of the biggest liabilities on the team was kick coverage, because they didn't really emphasize it. And South Carolina really hasn't had a bunch of big returns against it and things like that. So, and that's what you want. Field goal kicking. Hopefully, I think the hope is Max Kelly or Upton Bellefonte can maybe provide a little more punch than Joyce. And before that, Herrera, like from 45 plus. The punting's been really good. Mason Love is an outstanding punter. He had some reaction on X yesterday about that, about the departure. But, we'll see. I mean, sometimes it is a good opportunity to go, to kind of, well, if somebody leaves, you just go hire somebody better. I don't know if there's too many better as far as history of special teams with Joe D. Camillus comparatively. But as far as why he took it, it's hard to, I don't know. It's a real, still, it's like any business, it's a relationships business. Clint Kubiak is the head coach of the Raiders. His father, Gary Kubiak, the longtime backup quarterback for John Elway with Dan Reeves out of the Broncos. And we all know the late, great Dan Reeves, Gamecock grad. He was Joe D. Camillus' father-in-law. And then Gary Kubiak obviously was the head coach of the Broncos 2015 season last year for Peyton Manning when they beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl. And Joe D. was a special teams coordinator under Gary Kubiak in Denver. Joe D is from Colorado originally. Lived in Atlanta a long time when Reeves was coaching there, and he's lived throughout the South. But Vegas is a little, there's worse places to live. Cost of living is low in Las Vegas and in Nevada, and Raiders are a good organization. I think he's just reuniting with some people that he's known his whole career. And you can't blame him. Can't blame somebody for that. The relationships there run deep. There's been an addition to the coaching staff. Speaking of relationships and people we've known for a while, Luke Doty has been added to the defensive side of the ball. He'll help Torian Gray with the secondary. I did see some things, some comments about, well, it doesn't make any sense because he's a quarterback, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know, he's an assistant to an assistant. You know, he's kind of part of the expansion of coaching staffs. There are a lot of former quarterbacks that coach every different, a lot of different positions, different sides of the ball too. You know, it's not just, well, I played this. I mean, Sean Elliott, for example, was a defensive lineman. He plays offensive line. And I'll say this as well. If Steve Spurrier, when he was here, decided he wanted to coach secondary, the rest of the defense, not so much. But secondary, he'd know. He'd know it. I mean, you spend most of your time as a quarterback in the pass game studying coverages. And so I think as far as launching a coaching career, there's nothing wrong with coaching on that side of the ball. You're doing something different. I think coaches are, it's like any profession. You want to learn as many things as you can if your goal is to be a head coach. And so good for Luke. Luke was probably the top leader on the team this past year, which those of you that were concerned about leadership, I mean, I don't know that it's ideal that your backup quarterback is the leader of the team, so to speak, but he was for all intents and purposes. Beamer talked about it, and I think that it was pretty obvious when you talked to people around the program. And I don't know about the leader. Nick Barrett was a good leader, and there were some others, but you know, his leadership's still there. He's still going to be around the program. Jalen Foster's still there, helping with the secondary as well. Obviously, a lot of leadership there, and it's always good to see former players get an opportunity. You know, saw some Clemson people pop off. They're doing dumb stuff like Dabo by keeping all these former players. Not really. I mean, Dabo, most of his full-time staff was former Clemson people. I think the only one at South Carolina, thinking through it right now, would be Travian Robertson. And I don't know of too many better than Travian. You know, Sterling Lucas turned the Gamecocks down as a recruit. He's from South Carolina, but he turned them down and went to NC State, where Clayton White was. Clayton White went to NC State. Torian Gray went to Virginia Tech. Deion Barnes went to Penn State, turned the Gamecocks down. Although, talking to someone that was kind of heavily involved with his recruitment, I don't know. South Carolina may not have pushed for him. Brad Lawing was there at the time. I don't. I gotta clarify that with some folks. But yeah, so they all went to different schools. Randy Clements, I believe, is a Baylor grad. Kendall Briles, Baylor. Stan Drayton. Gosh, I don't even know what his alma mater is. I need to look it up. Mike Furry was at Ohio State, then Northern Iowa. Shane Beamer, Virginia Tech. So, I mean, you know, it's not, you know, it's not like there's nothing but former players. But I'll tell you this, if they're good enough coaches like Travian Robertson, why not do it? So I think some of that was just ex banter, you know. And we're going to get into some of that on the show, too. There's some stuff out there. The Gamecock baseball team took 2 of 3 over the weekend from Northern Kentucky. Very disappointing. Saturday after Friday, that was sort of too much of a struggle for, I guess, a game against a Horizon League team. You know, I had a rally to win. KJ Scobie with a walk off, he got all the momentum, and then you lose 3-2. The head coach afterwards says, "Well, we're tired," and I don't know, man. That rubbed some people the wrong way. And look, here's the thing. If South Carolina had gone to a regional last year and had high hopes for this year and they dropped one game, I don't think anybody would be complaining. But, you know, this fan base deserves winning in men's sports. I'll say that over and over again. And so it probably stings a little bit more, right, to lose that game. Gamecocks are right back in action, though, with the Wofford Terriers, my hometown of Spartanburg, beautiful new ballpark, Fifth Third Park. Got to cruise through there over Thanksgiving, and I've seen it kind of come alive. And it's home of the Hub City the Hub City Spartanburgers. Oh, their gear is awesome. But minor league team, and going up there to play Wofford, Tyler Bock's former team. And then Gardner Webb comes in for a Wednesday night tilt. It's 5:30 on the SEC Network tomorrow night, up from Sparkle City. So, chance to get right back off the mat. And, you know, in baseball, one loss doesn't hurt you. It doesn't kill you. And look, I'm going to say this too while we're on the subject. There were a lot of SEC teams that took losses over the weekend. Missouri's picked behind the Gamecocks, lost to Mount Saint Mary's. Georgia looked pretty impressive the first two games, lost to Wright State, which is the other team from the Horizon League, other than Northern Kentucky, that's expected to be a contender. Florida lost to UAB. Arkansas lost a game. Oh, who did Arkansas lose to? Maybe it wasn't Tarleton State, JC. I'm looking that up right now. They fell there. Oh, they're Texas Tech. They were over in maybe it wasn't Texas Tech, maybe somebody else. They were TCU, I think. They're over there in Arlington. Oklahoma looked very impressive in Arlington, by the way. Vanderbilt, not so much. They were 1-2. In that big neutral site, I think Globe Life Field. I would love to see the Gamecocks go over there and play. But everybody, you know, a lot of teams took losses. You know, Florida, I mentioned Georgia, Vanderbilt, Alabama took a loss to Washington State. You know, so they're not alone, but I understand the frustration. And I'll say this, like I say everything else with early season stuff, it's okay to struggle, but it can't continue. They got to get the bats going. The whole thing about this team was that they were concerned about pitching, especially after the McCoy injury. I thought the pitching held up pretty well over the weekend. There's some guys that, you know, baseball folks really like, and you know, but the bats, that's just that gets even more frustrating when you just, you know, you can't hit. And then the comments about being tired, I don't know, it raises some slight red flags. Men's basketball fought hard, but really just not good enough right now. I don't know what's going to happen with that program moving forward, but trust me, we're keeping an eye on it. It's bottoming out, circling the drain, so to speak. And then the women's basketball is 89-75 Alabama, by the way. Closer than normal, the normal trip to Tuscaloosa, right? Still, though, I mean, you just never got the sense, no matter how well Carolina played, or I don't know that they played well, but how close it was in spurts, you just never got the sense. And it's kind of been that way the whole year. The women's basketball team, though, an epic win is what I'll describe it. Nobody likes Kim Mulkey. Nobody was fired up that Malaysia Fulwalee walked out the door and left. In fact, there were some people that were a little mad about that. She didn't impact the game hardly at all. Tessa Johnson on fire, 21 points for her. No. Yeah, she had 21. Raven Johnson had a career high 19. So they were big in the win, 79-72 in Baton Rouge. Dawn Staley still has not lost to Kim Mulkey, 6-0 against LSU, and some in some championship situations. And the Gamecocks, despite taking some shots in the game from LSU and LSU cutting it close late, they pulled away, just like winning programs do. And so good for them. They play Alabama on Thursday. So that's kind of the recap of the weekend. Just wanted to get that out in case you're listening here early. What I want to talk about today with football is, okay, so I look at the defense, right? And I feel like if Travion Robertson, Deion Barnes can maximize some of these guys up front, and if the linebackers, who were like typical young linebackers up and down, you know, I thought Fred Johnson would be better and more consistent. He wasn't. I thought Justin Okoronkwo was really good in spurts, but you can tell he's young. And then I thought Sean Murphy came on at the end of last year, sort of playing like the player we expected. You know, so he got better. They got better, but they need to take a step forward and play like they're, you know, they need to get more third year. You need to really start getting more toward your ceiling and be the player that you can be at all times. And consistency is important at linebacker because you're reading keys. You have to stay mentally locked in. You can take a false step and just look horrible. You know, it's one of those where you got to be dialed in, and a lot has to come naturally. And I can't say that they always did it. Nevertheless, the whole front seven, I'm relatively optimistic about this year. I like the portal pieces. It's just going to be a matter of individually how many of these guys do they get more toward their ceiling? How many of these guys can take that step to where they can make a difference? Not just play, but make a difference. And I'm reasonably confident that something in some kind of combination that can happen. You know, there are a lot of guys that some of the guys they brought in from their portal, the portal, they've shown the ability to play. They played a lot at Tennessee and Alabama. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, getting them more, taking that next step. Sort of like, I don't want to say Kyle Kinnard because everybody's like, oh, Kyle Kinnard, everybody's going to be the next Kyle Kinnard now. But that's what he did. You know, Kyle Kinnard did not play, did not produce like he did at South Carolina until he got to South Carolina. And so that's the hope there. And I'm relatively confident that can happen at some scale. Where I have a lot of questions is in the secondary. And because here's the reality about that group. And it's not that I don't have faith in Torian Graham. He puts a good product on the field each and every year. You want to talk about player development, he's amazing. Million-dollar man and worth every penny, in my opinion. Co-coordinator title now. I mean, he's the best in the country. Virginia Tech, James Franklin came after him, wanted to bring him home. Shane Beamer was able to keep him. I thought that was huge. Evaluates well, develops well. I always say you can take 2 and 3 stars and make them pros. He can take the 5 stars and make them pros. It really doesn't matter. Knows what he's doing back there quite a bit. And then you got Jeff Collins back there helping with safeties. And I mentioned Luke Doty and Jalen Foster. And you got a lot of help back there with them too. But the bottom line is South Carolina did lose two guys that will be drafted in Brandon Ceesay and Jalen Kilgore out of the secondary. A corner slash nickel and then a nickel. So nickel is what you circle and you look at Quaysheed Scott, who they brought in from the portal, and you kind of can pencil him in there. But who's behind him? You know, because you got to have depth. I mean, look at what happened to Judge Collier last year, and then you had to have guys step in and play. And we've talked about Miles Norwood last season, maybe not, you know, after a pretty good spring, he really struggled in the games at times. And, you know, sometimes couldn't cover. And that's an issue at corner. And you ended up needing him. And it just didn't happen. So depth is a concern, you know, once you get past the starters, especially a nickel, because that's an important, I've said it before, it's an important part of this defense that Clayton White likes to run. You gotta be good there. And South Carolina has been, you know, they have been. So you kind of look at it overall, you know, South Carolina plays five defensive backs at a time. So you've got big numbers on the roster. It's probably why they like to have coaching help back there. Because you got a lot of guys compared to the linebackers, which aren't as big of a group. But the two key things to having a good year in the secondary, and I'm not saying they won't, I'm just saying they've got to fill some voids here, are depth at corner and answers at safety. What are the answers at safety? And when I say answers, I mean starters and impact players, right? You know, who could make an impact back there, not just merely line up and play. And I'll start with the safety position because it's, you know, it has a loss too. DQ Smith was a 4-year starter who the coaching staff loved. Maybe the coaching staff loves him more than the fan base. There's guys like that. I understand that. I get it. But, you know, he had a heck of a career as a converted quarterback and was as solid as they come. And here's my opinion as to why the staff loved him is he's in the right position, knows where to go, knows what to do. Didn't always make the play, as we all know, but I think that when you look back to the Will Muschamp era, the one of the greatest mysteries was why South Carolina was not good at safety. And the reason was in that defense. It puts a lot on the safeties. Like this defense, not so much, but your safeties still have to kind of get people lined up. You know, they're kind of, in many ways, some of them are the quarterbacks back there. And then kind of the I guess 2.0 version of Clayton White's defense, like we saw with Nicky Minwore when he picked Nussmeier and had a pick six robbed against LSU in 24. He was describing that play, and it's a switch. It's like in the middle of the play. It's like basketball. You switch men, and so you know if you play smart back there, it gets difficult, you know, as far as a quarterback goes, because you're thinking this is going to be the read, and then it's not. You throw it right to him, and it's very good coaching. And if you can execute it, that's great. And so that was not just Nick being a monster athlete. That was Nick being an intelligent safety. And so you got to have some football IQ. Some, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not as difficult as the Kirby and Muschamp defense and all that. But you know, that's why. And so that's why they like DQ Smith, I think, because he knew where to go, what to do, how to get people lined up, and all that good stuff. And he played hard, you know. DQ made some plays through the years. I think last year, with the way things went, everything gets magnified. There were some games where he played quite well, especially against the run. I think Ole Miss, for the most part, I'm not talking about the end when Lacey went for the clinching touchdown when it was basically over, but you know, he stepped up in the box and made some plays. But you know, he's gone, so you lose a 4-year starter back there. So who replaces? Who starts? Well, you got Peyton Williams. He started most of the year last year. He's back. I would imagine he would be penciled in as a starter, but you play two, right? And then a nickel. And so there's all these candidates for it. So who are the answers is the question. And I'll go through them. Is Gerald Kilgore an answer? I think everybody likes him because he makes big plays, or has. Kind of seems to have a nose for the football. It's his final year. Everybody likes him. He's a possibility. You know, I think Kelvin Hunter, in a couple seasons here, you know, he's been banged up some. You know, he would be one I would say, what's his role this season going into his third year? Kelvin Hunter from West Florence, a 4-star guy, physical guy. You know, is he a nickel even? I don't know the answer there. Yeah, a player I'm real high on is Kendall Daniels Jr., 6'4", 218. And they talked about him last season as playing more and more. He got into the dime package. Shane Beamer mentioned him a couple of times. I've talked to some people over there that are really high on him. Big athletic kid, a high school quarterback out of the state of Virginia, he's 6'4", 218. Now, does that mean he's going to be Nick just because he's 6'4", 218? No. But he's that big plus size guy that can move around and play physical. And he got better. Nobody, only Shane Beamer talked about it, right? Because there were other things going on. But he obviously got better and better and better in practice because he started playing more and more and more, not just on special teams. So I have him circled. You know, first full year playing, is he going to go out there and set the world on fire? I couldn't predict that right now, but I couldn't rule it out. I mean, I think he's got a big future. So there's a guy. David Busey is another guy that they're high on. I thought there were moments he played pretty well getting in there. It's his first year really playing a lot of safety. He's a special team stud. So he'll continue to play special teams, and then we'll see what happens with him. Jazavian Currents. This is interesting. Is he a corner or nickel? I mean, sorry, a corner or a safety or a nickel? 6'4", 210 when he hits campus. Great high school football player. Also played quarterback. What's his outlook for the first year? You know, this is nothing against Peyton Williams, because I'll tell you right now, I'd be slightly surprised if Peyton Williams isn't the starter against Kent State at one of the safety spots. That's just kind of the MO around here. And again, your safety needs to know what to do. You know, so there's a mental part of it. But in a perfect world, you know, where these players, these younger guys, end up just being ballers and too good to keep off the field, I'll take it back to 2022 when DQ Smith and Nicky Benware were freshmen and starting back there. Kendall Daniels Jr. and Jazavian Currents are very intriguing to me. 1 6'4", 218, 1 6'4", 210, as these dual monster safety guys. Like, could Currents be a corner? That's another question. I think it's a legit question. That's more of a gut feeling Some things I've picked up here and there. But, you know, if you ask me what would be the ideal scenario, what's gonna bring out the freaks, so to speak, it would be for Daniels and Kearns, no matter how young they are, to be the starting safeties for the defense in 2026. And maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong before. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. Maybe that's not the most ideal, you know. I'll leave that to the folks that watch practice every day. But I, you know, just as far from a freaky talent, like, wow, there's a lot of length back there. That would be great. Is Jalua Solomon a corner? Or I think he's going to corner. I think he's a corner this year. Chris Hadfield is a player that Beamer talked about. He got here over the summer last year. Listed 6'2", 206. Another tall, rangy guy. You know, don't count him out. Don't count him out based on just some feedback I've gotten. He's kind of an unspoken guy. You know, I got Tristan Lewis coming in from Greenwood, 6'2", 207, converting from quarterback. You know, I don't know what his, you know, I guess he probably, I wouldn't say he's one of my potential answers back there, but can he get on special teams? Absolutely. And I mentioned Peyton Williams coming in, or I mean, coming back. You know, Peyton, he got some, made some turnovers. I mean, it's not like, and you know, you don't know too, were we all sitting there going, God, we miss Nicky Minwori, because that's a fact. That's just a fact. And you couldn't do anything about that. You're not going to replace him. You know, who do you replace him with? You can't. You just, I mean, that guy, you saw what he did in the NFL this year. Super Bowl champion, just an absolute baller. But, you know, I don't know that Peyton played bad. To make a big difference and have a great final year, will he have to up his game? Absolutely. And he may have to up his game to hold off some of these other guys. So, are there potential answers at safety? Yes. Will they be determined in spring? Yeah. And you know, I kind of got my eye on six guys: Kilgore and Busey, obviously, and then Kearns and Daniels. You know, so there's kind of four. Kilgore and Busey, obviously, are the older players. Kearns and Daniels are younger. But Jazavian Kearns, I'd be very surprised if he's not in the hunt this year. I mean, he's just too good of a player, and he's kind of a high floor guy. And those guys that end up dominating the high school football playoffs in South Carolina end up playing earlier, I've found. Going over to nickel, I mentioned Quasheed Scott. He can also play some corner. Played it at Kentucky. Like him. I think he's an answer there. Behind him are some questions. You know, Jaquel Hallman probably would be nickel number two, as he was last season, technically. They would slide Cisse over there too to give Kilgore a break, but they had more flexibility at corner. But I think he's a plug and play at that spot. I like his physicality. In-state kid from Marion, SEC experience. I mean, there's just a lot to like there. Behind him, I mentioned, and Hallman's an in-state guy too, big time athlete. There was a lot of question. So you can play running back. So he can play linebacker. What's he going to be? Well, he's a nickel. And when he got out there, I thought he played pretty well for a true freshman. And he's a kick returner, apparently, we saw as kind of the up back there. But I like Jaquel, and he needs to take a step forward. But, you know, Zapari Sandy hurt again last year. That's frustrating for him from Washington, D.C. He was kind of the number two nickel. Physical guy can get in the box and mix it up. And then, you know, will somebody play there? Jalua Solomon played there as a true freshman. Will he be a nickel? Could that be Kelvin Hunter in a role for him? There's a lot of questions there. You know, not a ton of depth at nickel, but, you know, you can also cross train guys at that position. I continue to think that's a very critical position. Those guys, Jalen Kilgore, so good against the run. And then really good at pass defense too. The Clemson game's an example of that. What teams try to do, I've noticed, is they try to get the nickel one-on-one in pass coverage situations. If you think about one that went Kilgore's way and one that did not go Kilgore's way. You know, Luther Burden in the Missouri game in 24. One-on-one coverage with the nickel. Burden won that one. But then Clemson tried to do that, and Jalen made a great play and intercepted Klubnik in one of the. There are a lot, not many highlights in that game in the second half. A lot of highlights in the first half. One of the first half highlights of that one. So Kilgore's a good player. I mean, and he had a big pass breakup against Bama too. That was, I don't know if he's in one-on-one with that or not. But so you have to cover, but then you also have to play in the box and be physical. So it's a South Carolina's had a good run through the years, going all the way back to Rashad Faison under Holtz. That played that nickel spur, they call it the spur. Emmanuel Cook, Darian Stewart was good. They were both really good at that spot in the early Spurrier era. You roll on through to Devontae Holloman, Antonio Allen. My goodness, those guys were really, really good. Muschamp didn't use a spur. It wasn't a 4-2-5 type alignment. Yeah, Sky Moore probably would have been a heck of a spur, so to speak. But Carolina was kind of thin at linebacker during that point. I'm trying to think going through. And then the nickel, you know, at South Carolina, that's been a spot that's been, you know, pretty good to the Gamecocks. Kilgore's kind of been the guy since 2023. But, you know, the nickel's a, you know, those guys play pretty well. It's kind of a glamour position when you look at the history of the program. And then there's corner. Now, okay, so corner is depth. There's answers there. The two answers are Vakari Swain and Judge Collier. Veteran guys, Vakari, one of the better punt returners in college football, statistically last year. We all wish he would have maybe broken more after the first couple of games, but I could, probably could have told you that probably was not going to happen. It's like sometimes when I'm watching baseball and my wife and I are like, you know, maybe it's a doubleheader or it's a three-game series, and in game one, they score 22 runs. Yeah, they're going to run out of runs. You run out of punt returns, right? Judge needs to return to form. You know, there was a lot of high expectations for Judge Collier last year, and then in one twist of the knee on the turf at Mercedes-Benz, all that was out the door. Came back and played, you know, played hard at times, but you know he does. He's an answer, but he's got to return to form. Behind him, them though, and this is interesting. It's not the deepest, most experienced group. I mentioned Jalua Solomon. You know, I think he was one that got in the portal and got back, just came right back. this is his time. You know, this is his third year. He needs to make an impact at corner and be a guy that is contributing for depth reasons back there. He certainly got the raw talent and all that. DeMarcus Leach was in the mix last year as a true freshman from Abbeville. Nice size on him, very fluid. I like that they moved him to corner. Could he make a Judge Collier type jump? You know, Judge kind of in 2023 went out there as a true freshman, just finding his way. And then by 2024, he was out there ready to go. So, can he make that kind of jump? That's a good question. Causey Barnes is coming in from Greensboro. He's already there, Greensboro Grimsley. Don't rule him out as a guy. Maybe he steps in like Leach did last year and plays, or maybe he's good enough to be in the two deep. He's one of those late riser guys. In other words, junior year, maybe he didn't have or sophomore year, like God, everybody recruits so early. Maybe he didn't have all these offers, and then boom, there he goes. You know, that's about it. KJ Johnson from Alabama's coming in over the summer. So Swain and Collier, it is very important to keep those guys healthy, I believe. You got to have good corners in this league. And I think they are. But behind them, you know, and that's why, you know, with Currents, I'm like, well, maybe they throw him over at corner. I don't know. They're not, there's nobody in South Carolina's building that's afraid of playing a 6'4 corner. I'll tell you that right now. There's not none. In fact, I believe they would relish it. But, you know, with corner, do you have the hips? Do you have this? Maybe he does. Maybe he does. I'd have to go look. But I wouldn't rule him out as far as being a answer, as far as not an answer, but depth at corner. So there's a lot there. And that's going to be an important part of the offseason is making sure that you compensate for the loss of three good players, Cisse, Kilgore, and Smith, two of which will be drafted in the NFL draft this spring. One, Cisse may be a first rounder. At this program, I don't think replacing draft picks in the secondary is something that is foreign to it. It never has been, at least not for the past 25 years. So I think they've recruited pretty well back there, and so they'll be fine. If individuals step up and they avoid injuries and all that, it could be a bugaboo. It could be an issue if they start having problems injury-wise, especially at corner, especially at corner. And then at safety, you know, people guys have to come out of the pack, right? You got to come out of the pack. Great to be back with you on Coffee. We got a full schedule today on the Chief Sports Network. I'm going to pop in on the morning show, talk a little more about the Joe D and Doty thing. It's Meatloaf Monday on the show, JC and Mad Dog again. So you'll see my face all day today. Don't forget, also, Sports Talk streams from 6 to 8. We'll have podcast versions of the Late Night Gamecock Show and SCC Sunday Night up tonight. Don't forget to follow at Gamecocks Show on X, at Inside the Gamecocks on Instagram, and at Inside the Gamecocks on Facebook. We will, we'll have a good day today. Let's get this paper. As my friend texts me, let's get this paper today. So this has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. All you have a wonderful Monday, and we will holla at you soon.